Welcome back to Digital PR Explained. Today I'm joined by Emma Thuman, a reporter at Campaign US, where she covers anything and everything happening in the ad agency world. She's a part of Haymarket Media's all-female editorial team and leads the Movers and Shakers Roundup. And if it piques her interest, occasionally Emma will also dive into creative work articles too, or articles around creative work campaigns. Before joining Campaign, Emma reported on local government and breaking news, including protest coverage that earned her a byline on CBC. And Emma's won multiple awards for news feature, opinion, and investigative reporting. And today, Emma has come onto the podcast to unpack two articles that she wrote about the same agency initiative. Both articles are published or were published 1 year apart. In January 2025 was the first article, and the second article, January of this year, 2026. And in both pieces, Emma covered BBH USA's, what they called their BB Happiness Days, and it's an initiative that gives employees additional PTO during what national data shows are the unhappiest times of the year, which I believe is now or at least coming up. I think it was March.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that hit. But anyways, what I loved about the examples that Emma shared, and by the way, welcome to the podcast, Emma.
Hi.
What I love most about the examples that you shared is that it wasn't just a one-time culture story. It became like a year two kind of follow-up story, and the framing shifted as the industry shifted. And do you have anything else to add, maybe to give listeners some more context about the articles before I jump into my first question?
Yeah, so the first article was mainly just announcing that, hey, this initiative started, have fun with that. And then the second article was a part of my revisiting article series where I just follow up on campaigns, hires or promotions, initiatives, agency, like when agencies were first established. I'll follow up with another article like 100 days later, 6 months later, up to a year later. Happiness Days was pretty much the first one I took a look at and said, I definitely want to follow up on it later. Mm. So I'm glad it worked out that way.
Yeah. Okay. So you had planned to follow up on it when you initially published the first article. And going back to the first article, I guess, you know, what made you decide or what made you think that BBH Happiness Days was worth, or BB Happiness Days? Is it BBH Happiness Days?
I just call it Happiness Days because that's kind of what everyone's been referring it to as, and it's just easier.
Yeah. Okay. So what made you think when you read about Happiness Days that this was worth covering on Campaign?
It's honestly kind of funny because, I mean, I'm still new to this industry. This is my first job out of college. And it's weird listening to like someone read out the awards I've won, because out of context, they're like, oh yeah, this person is like well established in their career, but I was still a student in college. So I don't know. It just felt interesting hearing it that way. But anyway, so I'm still new to the industry, still new to corporate white collar America. But so I didn't know what initiatives companies would have that benefited their employees. I wasn't too familiar with those. But when I read that email, it kind of just stood out to me because I also just didn't know that there was what people considered the unhappiest days or times of the year, especially what we're about to go into, which is that federal holiday drought, I guess. Yeah. I remember when I was still a college student, that never really crossed my mind because I went to a Catholic institution. So March, we had spring break. April, we had Easter break. And now this is like my second full year in white collar. And the last drought wasn't very fun. And this drought will be interesting. But yeah, it just really stood out to me because even though I'm still a novice in this, what is going to be the new norm for me, I just never heard of something like that before.
Okay, so it personally resonated with you. And yeah, we just celebrated, well, we just had President's Day. So you must have savored the long weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, that's really good context. Is it, do you remember, or can you share a little more information about the email itself?
It wasn't pitched to me personally, only because I had started writing for campaign in November of 24. So I didn't have as many like established contacts in January 25. So it was initially pitched to my editor, Luz, who found it interesting and forwarded it to me. And I took it on from there. But when she forwards that kind of stuff to me, I mean, she's doing what a boss does, like, hey, I think you should write about this, but there are also suggestions. But I just really found it interesting from there. But it just basically had like the rundown of what the program was, what the initiative was about, and not much else. I don't know if that's a good enough answer, but that's
That's perfect. Did it read like a press release, would you say?
It wasn't really a press release. It was just a plain old pitch. It was just, hey, this is what we're doing. Here's some bullet details about it. Let me know what you think.
Got it. Okay, so really short and straightforward to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I also had questions, too, because you mentioned that you were new to campaign going back to November 2024. And just out of curiosity, when you started campaign, did you kind of just get like bombarded with pitches?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I was right away because, I mean, I had only just covered like hyper local news. Like the majority of the coverage I did, it was for Tap Into, which is like a state, I think it's just in New Jersey, it could be in other states, but it's a publication that has like Tap Into, let's say, Madison, New Jersey, or Tap Into Jersey City, New Jersey, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And it's just all very hyper local news. And then when I reported for the student run newspaper at my college, that was like hyper local. So I didn't really have as much of a presence outside of what I was already doing. So I don't believe I was really bombarded with anything. I think it was just slowly over time, just accumulating more contacts and just people reaching out to me. My editor definitely helped with that because a little after we both joined the campaign, because she and I started around the same time, that's when she assigned me my beat, or in journalism, that's area of reporting. And it just had to do with agencies. And it was kind of narrowed down because we have our data reporter, we have Julia, who covers both campaign and PR week, and then we have Leslie, who is already pretty established in just creative and writing about creative campaigns. So she already has her slew of emails. So it just kind of worked out that way. And then just over time, getting my inbox filling up more.
Yeah. Okay. That's just a general question I love to ask. And that's intel.
Mm.
So going back to the pitch, you wrote the story. You had to, just from reading the article, I'm assuming you connected with someone from the agency. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on who.
I forget his name off the top of my head, too. I just know that the first one, he works for BBH, like, in general. And then the one I connected with after is... in the second article is the CEO of BBH USA. I think the first guy's name is Ryan. I could be completely wrong.
It's okay.
I'm just trying to remember.
Just about like, so you interviewed, let's just say Ryan, and you published the story and you had an idea that you would follow up on the story to see where this goes, maybe how employees were like liking it, how mm-hmm. employers were liking it, and just put a pin in it, right? Did you mention to the agency that you were going to do that, or did you just, you know, make a mental note for your own sake?
I made a mental note, but I also told the contact, I also let the agency know, like, hey, I want to follow up on this later. And the initial plan was to follow up in September, because that was kind of like half a month after the last I'll call it section of unhappiness days were happening, mm-hmm. which I think was like mid to late August. So I was originally planning to follow up or do a follow-up piece that September, but then it just worked out to do it a year later instead.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I noticed the September stat too. So, sorry, I'm like, wow, September sucked. For me personally. So, let's see. You ended up following up a year later. In the meantime, this podcast is all about dissecting, like, how to work well with a journalist and reporters. So, did the agency like nudge you closer to September, or were they pretty Were they proactive or not about following up on the story?
So I spoke with Molly Muldoon. Mm-hmm. She is a contact for Publicis North America. That's the holding company that has BBH USA. I honestly think it was just like her and I just not responding to each other's emails for forever. Honestly, I think that was it.
Okay.
Which I get, like our emails just getting lost in each other's inboxes.
Yeah.
It's probably not the answer you're looking for, but
that's just how it worked out. Yeah. I mean, I like when that happens because like a lot of people might give up if they don't hear back from a journalist, but I always say like they're busy and to not think that it's a bad thing.
Mm.
You know, be a little bit more optimistic when stuff like that happens because obviously this worked out and we were just busy with other deadlines and, you know, events and activities that you were covering. Mm. So that's good to know. And I love to ask that. So you followed up on the story a year later with a little bit of a different lens. Can you talk more about how that went and if you were surprised?
One of the things that surprised me was when I was interviewing with the CEO and I said, what was the most surprising thing about the initiative? I always like to ask those in my revisiting articles because you never know. And he went, well, I'm surprised that the initiative was news. I'm surprised that someone wrote about it and that it was considered news because how do I word this? So this is like semi-quoting the articles, semi-quoting him in a time when we're seeing holding companies or companies in general retracting different benefits. We're seeing other companies giving more benefits. And so I think it just surprised him that it actually made the news. But at the same time, like in that context, he could understand why it was newsworthy. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed the process of writing the follow-up article because I also wanted to hear what employees thought about it, not just leadership. And Molly was really helpful with that. She got quotes and pictures from, I think, 4 other employees that weren't in leadership positions. And I sent her a list of questions, I believe, where I was like, hey, here's like what I'm basically going to be asking them. And then she sent me their responses. And she was just really helpful with that, which I really appreciated. Because one of the things that I try to do with my agency beat is I try to focus more on employee well-being and just employee feedback. And I think it's really important to understand what's going on in like office culture and what's actually going on, not just what leadership is saying.
Yeah, that's really good to know. So Molly took the initiative to gather those quotes and those pictures. Headshots obviously are really nice to have. Is there anything else in particular that you find helpful when you're writing a story, even if it's like something small, like the PR person schedules the interview versus you having to do that? Those little details are always helpful to know.
Let's see. This is more like a small detail for me, but I mean, I write the Movers and Shakers roundup. So occasionally I do cover campaigns and we have a separate email for it just to spare my inbox. But whenever people pitch campaigns to that email, let's say they want to send like what the actual campaign video is, it's awesome if it's a YouTube link. And not like a link to Vimeo or something like that, because just how it's formatted on the website, it's just so much easier to just go to the YouTube video and find the link to embed. Mm. And then that's just how it goes through the website and publishes. It's always nice when I don't need to spend the extra 5 minutes looking for the YouTube video itself. So it always helps when people send YouTube links and stuff like that.
That's a good one. I was going to say it's a huge time saver for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always try to think about that myself. Like, how can I just save the journalist time?
Mm-hmm.
Make their day easier?
Yeah.
You know, I think that always obviously increases the chances of them including whatever it is that you want them to include.
Mm.
But also it strengthens that relationship clearly, as you referenced with this relationship or, you know, this, I want to, you know, relationship can mean many different things, but this working relationship example that you've shared about Molly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess I think that's all of the questions that I had about those two examples. But is there anything else that you wanted to make sure we chatted about that was important to that example? And then I can ask you just one more housekeeping question if that sounds good to you.
In terms of that article, no, I don't.
I love it. Straightforward.
Really, yeah.
No,
I don't think there's anything
helpful.
Else.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. My final question for you, Emma, is what kind of agency stories are you most interested in covering right now? And I guess it's a twofer. What are you tired of seeing in your inbox?
It's not necessarily of what I'm tired of seeing in my inbox. It's that I'm tired of seeing my inbox because it gets draining.
Too real.
And I don't mean it negatively because I know I did that. That whole post on LinkedIn that was inspired by that journalist from, I think, the Wall Street Journal.
I was going to mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll link to it in the show notes, too, because it's so helpful.
I'm glad I did it. And one of the things I mentioned in it is follow up with me as many times as you need, because it will get lost in my inbox. And I still encourage that. But I think on my end, I feel bad when I'm not able to follow up as quickly as I want to. And it's something I'm still addressing personally myself, because one of the interesting things that I've had to navigate with this job is notifications. And this was something I started struggling with when I was editor-in-chief of Seton Hall's student newspaper. It was a busy year that year. I was keeping track on Instagram, keeping track on emails, Snapchat, any like social media or way to get in contact with somebody. It was a news crazy year. And it got to the point where the notifications were just way too much for me. And I still kind of deal with that a little bit. That's why I always say to people, just follow up with me. Even if you feel like you're being really annoying, I promise you're not. I'm still struggling on my end how to navigate notifications, emails, that kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know if that even answered either of your questions, but I went on little tangent.
I think that's really important because people like to set hard and fast rules when it comes to the follow-up and, you know, are afraid sometimes to send more than one, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like you are actually open to receiving more than one follow-up as long as it's not threatening or, you know, rude and is intentional. And, you know, there's actually a story that person thinks that you would be interested in. Obviously, anything that's irrelevant and is clearly, it's clear that they haven't read what you cover, then it's just like annoying. But
yeah, because I've still had people pitch me about potential stories regarding the creator economy, campaigns, other stuff like that. And it's frustrating to see those, and I'll try to redirect them or something like that. But it's frustrating to see those after having posted that, because you look at it, I say like, hey, if you want to pitch someone that, here's other people. I feel like I'm sounding mean saying this, but whenever I'm in my inbox and I see news about specific campaigns or just something about the creator economy or something that has nothing to do with agencies, that gets a bit frustrating. And I totally get it if it's your first time emailing like anyone from campaign and this is just the only email you have. I totally get that. I don't know. It's a little peeve of mine sometimes.
I mean, no, I would understand. I think that's fair, you know, because there's ways to get other people's emails at campaign. And like, yeah, that I think you're being too nice. So. And I mean, you also do question of the week as well. I believe you're still doing that. And I mean, I can totally understand how your inbox would get inundated because when you post about that, like you explicitly ask people to email you, I believe sometimes maybe even leave a comment on the LinkedIn post.
Yeah. Those are the only two ways. Some people have asked me saying, well, do you do outreach? Do you send this on an email list? I'm like, I don't even know how to do that. I just post it on LinkedIn. You can comment your answer or you can email it to me. But I found ways to like navigate my inbox a little bit. And one of them is in those posts, I'll say at the end, please have question of the week as your subject line. So it goes to a specific folder in my Gmail so that I don't miss it. Because there have been times where people submitted responses to me, but digging through my inbox, I never caught it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an easier way for everyone to be happy, I guess.
I appreciate that.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I appreciate that because I'm one of those people that email you the answers sometimes to those questions. And yeah, I believe my first few emails didn't have that in the subject line. So when I saw that, I was like, yes, perfect. So always helpful and understandable. All right, Emma. Well, I think I've got all of my questions answered. Again, I'm so grateful for you taking the time to chat. And I guess just to make sure, is there anything else that you wanted to communicate to my listeners before we ended the conversation?
Nothing else, really.
I'll link to, in the show notes, the document that you have listing all of the information about what your beat is and what kinds of stories you cover. And I love, too, that you have information there for folks who are, like, pitching campaign outside of your beat, who's the best contact for what. So I will reference that in the show notes so listeners can check it out if they want to pitch you anything or anyone else at campaign. And thanks again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again for reaching out to me. This was nice.
Thanks again for listening to the Digital PR Explained podcast. If today's episode sparked any questions or thoughts, I'd love to hear from you. Whether it's about a topic that was covered or something you'd like me to explore in future episodes, let me know. Your input is super valuable. So don't hesitate to reach out. You can connect with me via email, social media, all of which can be found in the show notes on my website. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you can never miss an episode.